Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi everybody, good morning. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge. This is your latest Manchester United transfer news as we would get huge transfer boosts around Lewis Hall, Matheus Fernandes. Will we bid for the World Cup superstar young midfielder Boadi of Lille? We'll give you the latest on that. And I think more importantly, why is he not on our profile? Because I don't believe in scouting players from the World Cup, but this is a player that has already held talks with Liverpool and Arsenal. And you sort of look at him last night and go, how has he slipped through the net for Manchester United in a summer where we need to buy 3 midfielders? We'll talk about that as well. A few other bits to bring in, but we're going to start off on Lewis Hall. Fabrizio Romano with quite an interesting update, to be honest with you. He said, over the last couple of days, Man United have kept contacts alive and have had active talks with those close to Lewis Hall. United have got genuine interest in the player. And he's one of the few targets at the left-back position. He's a player that Man United really, really love. So, look, that is significant. Obviously, I'm not about to dismiss Sam C or Ben Jacobs, who've been talking about Lewis Hall for weeks on this channel and on their own account. So, look, that is not Romano dropping an exclusive. But what I do like is the fact that those talks are developing. I think with Lewis Hall, it's one thing to have interest over the last few weeks. It's another thing to have talks over the last couple of days. So I think Lewis Hall is certainly somebody that has the potential to develop. I'll talk about Boadi in a minute, JJ. I mean, we're not even talking about him at the moment, so you can shove your happy smiley emojis up your ass. We're talking about Lewis Hall. So basically, it's... He also goes on to say, very, very difficult deal to do with Newcastle because they will not want to sell Tonali and Lewis Hall. And he mentioned the Isak saga of last summer. So I think with Lewis Hall, let's be very careful because, you know, look what happened with Belaba last summer. And look what happened with Belaba in many ways. It was a good job that we didn't do the deal. But we went in for Belaba and we didn't come out with him because Brighton said, this is the price, and we didn't do it. So what my concern is about Lewis Hall is that it feels like the player would like to come to Manchester United if a deal can be done. And it definitely feels like Manchester United would like to do a deal with Lewis Hall if a deal can be done. The big elephant in the room is Newcastle, in the sense that they may just say, I don't want to do that deal, or we don't want to do that deal. And if they don't want to do that deal, I can see a similar situation with Belaba where we say, well, we want to do a deal. And Newcastle say there is no deal to be done and we just don't do a deal. And then at the end of the transfer window, we don't have a left back, which is what happened with the midfield last summer. So I am encouraged by the Lewis Hall story. But as I've said all along, you've got to get Newcastle on board. And as we've seen with this summer transfer window, the prices are incredibly high. So how do we manipulate this situation to make it happen? Because it needs to happen. I mean, look, shout out to the World Cup crew. I'm actually feeling very good this morning. That's why I'm doing the show at 12 instead of 10. We will be back in the 10 o'clock show Monday to Friday, by the way, but it is a Sunday. It is the weekend. I was up till 4 o'clock watching Scotland, but more importantly, Mazraoui, Morocco, left back. I thought he was brilliant. It is the World Cup. I put my hands up. It's the World Cup. It's slower. But you know what? I think good players still play well in the World Cup. They're still good players. But I also think that... sorry, Caxo. Can we... Yeah, well, thank you. Can we block him as well, Savage? Don't delete him. Just get rid of him. Yeah, thank you very much. Couple of idiots. Toxic Sunday. Probably got work tomorrow. My point is, I think that with regards to Mazraoui, I thought he was brilliant last night at left back. But that doesn't mean we don't need to buy a left back. We've got to be very careful of this and we need to call it out. We don't need to buy a left back because Mazraoui played well in the World Cup. We don't need to buy 3 midfielders because Mason Mount played well against Brighton in a meaningless game and Fletcher sat on the bench for Scotland in the World Cup. Can't fall into these traps. Lindelof can play in the midfield. We can't solve Too many of our fans act like it's their bank balance. Too many of our fans go, too much money, walk away. Don't bother signing a left back, we'll just use Mazraoui there. Don't bother buying a striker, we'll just put Mbeumo up there. You know, we as fans, this, why would you do it? Why would you help this absolutely dreadful ownership out? They need to go and buy the best players. Otherwise, we won't be their best team. So Mazraoui playing well at left back last night didn't make me think we don't need a left back. That made me value Mazraoui and make me question why Carrick hasn't used him that much. Because I think Mazraoui can do that at right back. He's actually a right back. His energy going back and forward made me think we're misusing him. We're misprofiling Mazraoui. We don't see Mazraoui in a Man United shirt bombing forward like he was for Morocco. We just don't see it. He looked, it was, and because his hair was different, I thought it was a different player. He was like so energetic. He was so fast. And he's up against Rafinha and Vinicius Jr. You can't even say he's up against clowns, you know. He's up against two of the best wide players in the world. And he's bombing forward like Hakimi because that's what Morocco are telling him to do. So I think with Mazraoui, he's not a left-back solution. We need to go and buy a left-back. But it does show you how bad Luke Shaw is as a left-back. You know, Lewis Hall would be way better than him. Mazraoui goes forward more than him. So we do need to sign a left back. I don't want to go into next season with, we can use Mazraoui there. You know, I want to use Mazraoui at right back, actually. And also, if you use Mazraoui at left back and Delo's your right back and one of them gets injured, what are we going to do? So for me, Mazraoui is invaluable. And I know this is a news show and we'll move on to Fernandes next. But I think with Mazraoui, I've always said this, it's got nothing to do with the World Cup. And many of you have said it as well. He is a player that since we've signed him, apart from injury, consistently gives 7 out of 10 performances. He's a very, very valuable player that we've misused. Again, it's another player that we've bought to Man United over the last 15 years that we've completely and utterly misused. Mazraoui should not be being benched by Delo and Shaw. End of story. Move on. He's a very good player being misused by this football club. And I wouldn't be surprised if we sold him, which is incredible to me because players like that, for a club that's craving consistency, we ignore it. He is such a consistent performer. And you know what? If you could get him going forward like that on the right-hand side, we'd be a lot better team. Jack Key says, maybe Xerxes should shave his head as well. Zlatan reborn. Yes. Emily Derry, thanks very much for your super chat. She says, if Hall insists on the deal, would Newcastle want a similar situation to Isaac? Because that hurts all parties. It would probably still cost north of 50. Worth it, though. I think with Lewis Hall, I'm just going to move on to Fernandes because there's some exciting stuff about him. I want to talk about this Bouadi as well. What I would say about Lewis Hall is 100% glass half full, be excited. Everything looks good at this moment. I wouldn't say it's close to deal done, far from it, but absolutely everything we've learned over the years, everything we know about transfers, Lewis Hall could be a story that had been buried like a cat shit 2 weeks ago. Man United are interested. It can't be done. It's over. And it feels like the story could go that way at some point. But at the moment, it's out there for all to see. That's a very recent update from Romano that's hot on the heels of Ben Jacobs 2 or 3 weeks ago. And as I said, Sam C was talking about it on X. Fabrizio Romano literally saying that in the last couple of days, we've maintained contact with people close to Lewis Hall, which means there's interest from there. Newcastle are going to be the barrier. And that's where, for me, it could be a little bit like Belaba, or Anderson, where it's like, in fact, let's not use Belaba because that was last summer. Anderson, where a priority player we won't go for because it's too expensive. Lewis Hall could easily become that. That's my reservation. United could, in effect, walk away from this deal because because it's too hard. And I worry about what Newcastle will ask for because for me, he's a 50/55 million pound player. They may ask for 70, 80. And at what point, you know, it's off then, isn't it? But let's keep an eye on it. It's certainly encouraging. Rich says, I know can't jump the gun, but that young lad from Morocco yesterday played both Casemiro and Bruno G off the park. How much more entertaining is the World Cup football than the Prem? Thank you, Rich. I will come back to that. Ravy says, Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. If you are Australian this morning, and maybe you've just adopted Australia, what I would say is I didn't watch that game because I'd done a lot of football last night and it was a 5 a.m. kickoff in the UK. But when I woke up this morning and I saw the score, Australia 2-0, I thought, you know what, I know if you're Australians, they'll have loved that last night. But as I said on Twitter, Turkey are forever the dark horses of the World Cup, and then they turn up like My Little Ponies. I mean, terrible result for them, but brilliant, brilliant for Australia. Rob Pollard and Jackie, welcome to the Members Club. Thank you so much for that. And Rob says, I've been listening to your show for years. Amazing job. I'm currently on day 49 walking/running across America for men's suicide prevention, and your show has kept me going. Walk with me, brother. Mate, if there's somewhere we could get a link for that, I think a lot of us would contribute to that as well. So Rob, that is a great cause. Running/walking across America for men's suicide prevention. Something that, you know, I think that obviously we're men and female, male and female viewers, of course, but I am a man. Many of you are. And, you know, male suicide is on the rise, has been for years. I was talking yesterday. I mean, thankfully, the shoulder is feeling a little bit better. And that's just like shoulder pain bringing the mood down. Tiredness can bring the mood down. But some people wake up every morning with the mood down, and it's a battle. I think people like yourself, Rob, are legends. And I think it's very important that, you know, no matter what we're talking about, things that make us happy and passionate, we have to also be open to the fact that, you know, people are suffering, and sometimes we suffer as well. So fantastic work there, Rob. I may not agree with a lot of things you say, but you consistently say United should sign the best and not look for plan C, D or E is absolutely spot on, says Roanoke. And I love that, Roanoke. You know, we're not meant to agree on everything. That's the brilliance of this community that we've built. Seth says, Dorgu turning into Bale is exciting. This also means we surely need a new left back. Do you think Thiago can happen, Mark? If not Hall, how about Kadioglu, says Seth. So Seth, your super chat sort of goes with Ronax, doesn't it? I mean, you mentioned good left backs there, but I think that at the end of the day, you're moving down from plan A to plan C, D or E. And look, Mateus Fernandes is going to be a Man United player. It really does look like that's going to happen. I'll talk about Buadi in a minute, but just in relation to Mateus Fernandes, there's almost a roundup of what's going on with him at the moment. So PSG are basically saying, Romano is saying that PSG are not busy with midfielders on the market at the moment. So that's coming out of Romano's mouth in relation to PSG. Real Madrid, in relation to Mateus Fernandes, are a danger, but they also have to move players on before they bring players in. And Arsenal, well, we heard that Arsenal like Mateus Fernandes, but they don't like the fee. So at the moment, we've got a really clear path and we're very advanced with Mateus Fernandes. Now, that's it. That's the update. I'm not here to, you know, it's not talk shit or anything like that. I'm not going to do a 10-minute video on Mateus Fernandes and, you know, give you the news by carrier pigeon that I've taken from everybody else 2 days ago. Where we are this morning with Mateus Fernandes is that we are ahead of everybody else, which is what we've constantly been reporting for the last 48 hours. We are ahead. We have buy-in from the player. We have buy-in from George Mendes, and we are negotiating with West Ham.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's quite rare for United to be able to do this, but it looks like PSG are looking at other things. Real Madrid are focused on other things and moving players out. And this is how we got Yoro. Real Madrid did want Yoro. They just didn't want to pay the fee and they didn't want to move as quickly as we did. And Arsenal seemed to be the same. So I think with Fernandes, the situation is very, very good. We shouldn't count our chickens yet, but it's progressing really, really well. We need a few more deals to go like that. But look, in relation to people like Diouf or Kadioglu or any other left back, the concern for me is that Fernandes clearly isn't the plan A. Probably not plan B. Probably not plan C. He's probably plan D as the marquee signing. As the second midfielder, I think he's probably plan A, but I think he's been promoted to the top tier now. And there's no way Man United had Mateus Fernandes ahead of Anderson or Tchouaméni, maybe not even Tonali. So with our marquee signing, we're not even getting plan A. If we don't get Lewis Hall, it's another player that Carrick doesn't get that's plan A. So I would like to get this Lewis Hall deal done. and not see United walk away from another deal because it's too expensive. You have to get the best. We are going into a very, very competitive season next season, and we're going to be playing double the amount of games. Yeah, Bruno Fernandes is fantastic, but you know, how many more years, seasons, months, games can we focus on Bruno Fernandes being the saviour of Manchester United? I think we need to bring in some top players this summer. And I'm very hopeful about Fernandes, but I think he's been promoted. I think he was going to be the second midfielder, and now he's going to be the star midfielder, and that's a lot for a 21-year-old who's only had, you know, one or two seasons in the Premier League with West Ham and Southampton. So if Fernandes is coming in as the marquee signing, I think the left-back needs to be plan A, really. Just on the midfield, by the way, obviously, watched Brazil last night. I don't do a told you so's, really, very rarely. But what I will do is justifiers. Remember when Casemiro was scoring those headers and people were like, one more year? You know, idiots, in my opinion, saying one more year because they're just lost in the moment that, you know, that sinks Man United. You know, there's too many fans and pundits and ex-players and journalists who don't think longer than the end of their nose. Oh, Casemiro's scored a goal. One more year, one more year. And it's very obvious that one more year for Casemiro would have been ridiculous. We were pushing our luck as it was. Carrick set the team up very compact to counterattack, so it limited the weakness of Maguire and Casemiro's lack of space. If you look at the way Carrick set Man United up, he didn't put Maguire and Casemiro in positions where they're on their own a lot. They always had somebody close to them, which was a clever move by Carrick and Holland to go compact and counter. So we hid Casemiro's deficiencies and we promoted his positives from set pieces. He simply, as you saw again for Brazil last night, in a game where the game opens up, he doesn't have the legs anymore. So keeping Casemiro for one more year would have been absolutely ridiculous. And also, we were playing one game a week. Imagine Casemiro trying to do that on a Saturday and then on a Tuesday in the Champions League. So Casemiro had a brilliant season for Manchester United last year, but that was it. It was definitely the right decision. And look, again, I'm not here to applaud Carrick and Wilcox and Berarda and Fivel and Sir Jim Radcliffe and everything like that. Their motives for removing Casemiro probably had more to do with 300 grand a week than it did with his legs going. But ultimately, the right decision was made. No contract was put on the table. We had to remove Casemiro. And I think some people who wanted to keep him last night had an awakening of, yes, we did need to remove him. So Casemiro needed to go. What we absolutely have to do is replace Casemiro. Like, there is no player that we're looking to buy or currently have that gets anywhere near the job he does. And he needs replacing. You know, the breaking off of the play, the leadership, the control, the conduction. Who's going to do that role? Ironically, there's a game last night where, I'm doing a lot of World Cup watch-alongs. We've got Ecuador, Ivory Coast at midnight tonight. We've got Japan, Netherlands at 9 o'clock. We're doing Germany at 6 o'clock. And on my That's Football watch-alongs, I always say player to watch. And it's normally a younger player to keep an eye on, right? And I said, Bouadi. Keep an eye on Bouadi. 18 years of age, plays for Lille. Keep an eye on him. Really high, really good reputation. I think a lot of people sort of like myself, got to see him in 4K. Well, not on ITV. Was it on ITV? BBC. But the point is, he played very, very well against people like Casemiro, Paqueta, Cunha, Bruno Guimarães, Fabinho in the second half. He played fantastically well. Are Man United going to bid for Bouadi? No. No. We're not in. Like, I messaged a couple of people last night. They came through on my phone this morning. United, Bouadi, forget it. I wouldn't be surprised if in the next week there is Man United in for Bouadi, because if you're a journalist, it's an open goal. But United do not have him anywhere near their list and they're not about to approach him. My only question is, why? Why? I don't know how we've missed that. I don't know how Favell's missed that. I don't know why we've not looked at him, because I put my hands up, I haven't watched Lille play a lot. But Arsenal, PSG and Liverpool are all battling out for him at the moment. So he's a good player. It's not like Brentford are looking at him. This is like a player that's being looked at by the world's top teams. And he plays in the midfield. And he's a conductor. and he can tackle. I'm not joking. That's the profile of player we need. Now, I'm not saying go for him, but that's the I think the reason so many United fans are talking about Bouadi this morning is, one, he was brilliant for Morocco in the World Cup. Two, our big rivals, Arsenal and Liverpool, are after him. And three, that's the profile of midfielder we need. Now, why are we not looking at midfielders like that? Because if you watched him last night, he did get the ball and drive forward, but he also just sat there in front of the defence in the pivot, broke the play up, took it off the back four and ran the show. That's the profile of player that Man United, I'm very surprised we haven't gone for. Now, I'm not saying Bouadi because we're not in for him, but that type of midfielder, almost Michael Carrick-esque, Busquets-esque, like a modern fusion of Rodri-esque, Casemiro-esque. It's surprising that Casemiro's leaving the club and we haven't actually got anybody apart from Tchouaméni and maybe Scott who can actually do that role. There was a point in the game where towards the end, in the last 10 minutes, the Crystal Palace centre-back, I forget what his name is for Morocco, gets the ball under pressure, sees Bouadi drop to receive the ball centrally, plays it into him. Bouadi's got two Brazilian players pressing him. And as the ball comes into him, he's applauding the pass from the centre-back, saying, good pass under pressure. Whilst two players press him, he just takes the ball and plays it forward. And I thought, Riyad, that's his name. Yeah, Riyad. Thank you, everybody. And I thought, you know what? Every now and again, you are massively impressed by a player. And I was like, you know what? It is the World Cup. The football is slower in the international scene. But when you look at the way he played and you look at the teams are after him and you do a bit of research on he's been doing this all season, he was brilliant. But we're not bidding for him. That's not what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is, why aren't we in for him? I don't know how the club have missed that. But secondly, more importantly, why are we not looking for a profile of player like that? Because I think when you look at United and you look at Michael Carrick, that's exactly the midfielder that we need next to Manu or Fernandes or whoever else. And I'm sorry, Edison's not that. And if Matheus Fernandes is going to be that, there's a lot of work to do with him. I saw somebody saying about Fernandes yesterday, he's got the potential to be the world's best number 10, the world's best number 8 and the world's best number 6. We just need to mould him into what we want. Oh no. Oh no. What you're saying is we're buying a player that could be a world-class number 8, a world-class number 10 or a world-class number 6, but we've got to turn him into it. Well, that didn't go particularly well with Yoro. I was very insistent that this summer that the replacement for Casemiro needed to hit the ground running. I'm not really on board with we've bought somebody with the potential in a few years to be the next Casemiro. We need somebody now. So we're not in for Bouadi, but I was very impressed with him. But I am slightly concerned that we're not in for a player who can actually do that role, because I'd be very concerned if he signed for Arsenal or Liverpool, because that's the profile of midfielder I want. Tchouaméni solves that problem, by the way, and I still wouldn't sleep on that. You know, we've had really good contacts around the Tchouaméni deal for a long time. United will press the button on that deal if Real Madrid want to sell. At the moment, Real Madrid are working through a lot of other things. I definitely was impressed with him. Blaber to replace Casemiro hooked at halftime yesterday, says Marcus. Stigo, thank you very much for your super chat. Flying out from Delhi tomorrow night, the first game England-Croatia, can't wait, says Mojo. Safe travels, enjoy it, pal. I hope you're doing very well. Goldfridge says, if we genuinely want Hall, the deal needs to be wrapped up while Liberamento is busy in the US. They'll never sell both and has been rumoured away for a year. Well, I think if we want Lewis Hall, going back to that, we need to move on that before Tonali, who's also not in the World Cup. I mean, if I was Lewis Hall and I wanted out of Newcastle, I'd be pushing hard right now, because every minute you don't is a minute where Tonali could leave as well. Now, I think with Tonali, there is a little bit of an update from Fabrizio Romano, actually. He said about Tonali and Man United, basically not likely. And I think, you know, I've been saying this for weeks. I just do not think United are in for Tonali. I've never believed we are. I think it's a name we like, I like, and he'd be a very good signing for us. And you look at, you know, you look at someone like Bouadi. You know, if you brought Tonali in that midfield next to a Fernandes or a Manu, you get that experience, you get that composure. I think it'd be very good, but yeah, we're not going to do anything with Tenali. And at the moment, it seems like it's quite quiet about anybody doing anything about Tenali. So there is an opportunity. There are a couple of weeks with Lewis Hall where if he pushes and we push, we might be able to get in there and get a deal done. But I think there's a lot of work to be done on it, if I'm being honest. We don't have a great relationship with Newcastle either, do we? Because of the Dan Ashworth saga. So I think it will be very, very difficult. And if we don't get Lewis Hall, where do we go? You know, I just don't want us to keep buying plan C, D and E. Rich says, yes, after yesterday, I'm not that bothered about Thiago. Yeah, I feel like with Thiago, obviously we did the video yesterday with Thiago on the thumbnail. It wasn't meant in a sense that we're in for Thiago. It was more about, I think the Manchester Evening News was saying that Man United are looking for a striker to complement Sesko with a bit of experience. And then it's just a question mark, isn't it? I don't think anybody knows who it is that United are looking at or would be looking at or could look at. I mean, Mateta has been mentioned, Thiago's at Brentford. But again, yet another game. I agree with Thick. I don't know where Thiago scores his goals, because every time I watch him, he's crap. And I watched him last night and he was crap again. But he has an incredible record. I mean, you cannot dispute the fact that he scored lots of goals in the Premier League. But for the price he is and what I see, I wouldn't be going anywhere near him, to be honest with you. I completely agree. Kenny says, have you ever been to Asia? Football is big there. I've never been to Asia, Kenny, but I do plan to go. Alchi says, if Esteban has a good World Cup with Ecuador, I'll keep pushing for him at United at left back. I mean, Esteban was a player that we were looking at. He is technically Premier League proven because he did play in the Brighton side a couple of years ago. He was linked to Manchester United by Ben Jacobs last summer, but obviously he moved to AC Milan. 28 is going to be the problem there. I don't think United are going to look at people that old. However, you never know. And he will be playing in the World Cup, so you will get to see him. But he was somebody that United were linked to a year ago. But I can't see us doing a deal for a 28-year-old, really. And ultimately, if you did sign Esteban or you did sign Diouf, I think you'd be in a scenario where you're signing plan C, D, E and F again. Daniel Thompson, hope you're doing very well this morning, says, hope you're doing well, Mark, and the United Stand community. Hope the neck and the back is better. He's still a bit sore, but it's a lot better than yesterday. He says, I apologise. I'm very frustrated on the update on Tonali. I think it's abysmal, cowardly mentality from the board. But on a positive note, sounds better on Hall. Yeah, I think Daniel, like, we've all got preferences. We just need to push on it. There is a worrying trend, which is not a reality yet, but there is a worrying trend that we are walking away from deals because they're too expensive. But I think we also know that this summer transfer window is going to be expensive. The scary thing about a transfer window is you can live in a bubble. You can live in a bubble of not reality. Transfer windows are great because it's one story to another, and one story dies, another one's born, and there's no games that jeopardise those signings. So if we don't get Elliot Anderson and then on Saturday we play Man City and he's brilliant for them and we lose 4-0, it's a massive story. But we're not playing Man City on Saturday, are we? We're not playing anybody for another 2 months. So losing and winning on transfers, it's just a bubble until the reality hits when the games come in. But when the reality hits next season and we haven't had a good summer transfer window, that's a problem for Carrick. That's a problem for us. So we do need to demand the best, because we all saw last season, and for me, the results from Christmas to May that got us third place were fantastic, but I fear it was a plaster on an open wound. And as what normally happens with a plaster on an open wound, it will need replacing and the wound will bleed through. This summer is the opportunity to have that surgery to fix that wound. If we go into next season and we don't fix it, it will get worse because we'll be playing more games and it will be an open wound that everybody can see. So next season for me, I don't feel like after last season United are back. I don't feel like after last season we're on the way up. I feel like after last season we got away with it. You know, the players and Carrick did a great job to get us third place, but I think we overachieved. I wouldn't say we're a top three side. I would say we're a top six side. And with Champions League football, will we drop or will we climb? That's why the summer is so important. So I'm not blind to the fact that where we are as a football club at the moment, I don't think we're anywhere near ready for next season. And Edison doesn't change that with Casemiro leaving. There's still a hell of a lot of work to do. And we can't keep buying Plan D players. We need Plan A because we're going to be playing in the Champions League next season and we're trying to finish better than third. This squad ain't capable of that. It needs more. Hoy4ProEver says, do you think clubs should sign players based on their World Cup performances? No. I've been a big advocate of this. I think the World Cup is fantastic. And much like a transfer window, it is a bubble. There is no football this summer. We've got the Festival of Football in the World Cup. It's very enjoyable. But what is factual is international football is slower and the players don't have a lot of time together. So it's tactically not as good either. You know, if you're West Ham, I know they got relegated, but you have 9 months together to work on patterns of play, etc., all week, you know, whatever. If you're an international coach, you bring 25 strangers together to get them to play a brand of football in 2 weeks' time. So it's different. What I would say is, Yamal's still a good player in a Spain shirt. And Messi's still a good player in an Argentinian shirt. And people like Bouadi, he's not like... There might be a player tonight that we watch in the Japan-Netherlands game or the Ecuador-Ivory Coast game where we've never heard of them before and we go, oh my God, they're brilliant. You don't scout players like that. You scout players like Bouadi and maybe Touré if he comes on for Ivory Coast later, who's had a brilliant season for Hoffenheim already and we should have been scouting and we have. So if Touré plays really well for the Ivory Coast tonight, you're not scouting him on the game against Ecuador. You're basically verifying your scouting that you've already done. He's already had a good season for Hoffenheim. He should have already been on our list. And here he is performing again. So I think that explains it for me. If you've got a player who no one's really ever took any notice of before and they have a good World Cup, don't go anywhere near them. If you have a player that has a good World Cup but also has had a good season and you know about them, that's different. Now, if you look at, I think Liverpool did it with a couple of Senegal players 2002, 2006, Diouf was one, and they bought a centre-back as well. They basically bought them off a good World Cup. United did it with Karol Poporski. We basically bought him off a good Euros. That's never a good idea. I think if people play well in the World Cup, who is it? What do we know about them? Now, with Bouadi, that will be an eye-opener to many people, but there is a backstory there where PSG, Liverpool and Arsenal already wanted him. So, yeah. Ladios says, did you sleep well? Your schedule is nuts. I've got to say, thoughts with everybody. I mean, I'm not an island. We are a capital city. We're massive. And the first Friday night we did, USA Paraguay at 2 a.m. I've got to say, in the second half, I was struggling between 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning. Yesterday, I felt tired, but by the time I started doing Brazil-Morocco, we finished at 1. I had like 45 minutes where I was waiting for the Scotland game to start at 1 a.m. and I thought, I'm going to be in trouble here. And I just got the guitar out, was playing a bit of guitar. And then next thing I know, it was 2 o'clock. And to be honest, most of the live chat were saying, go to bed. I think they were self-projecting. I was absolutely fine. So I actually, this is how fine I was. Shout out to the New York Knicks. Who enjoyed that? Because when Scotland finished, I had Amazon Prime on. I didn't even go to bed at 4 o'clock. I went to bed at like 4:45 because the Knicks were on in the last like 7 minutes of the fourth quarter. And it was really close. And I don't really watch basketball, but I really enjoyed it. So I didn't actually get to bed till about 4:45. And I felt fine. And I got up this morning at about 11:20. And I feel fine now. And the good thing about tonight is I'm not doing a 2 a.m. I'm doing midnight. So I'll be done at 2. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. To be honest, it's a little bit like when you go on holiday to, you know, somewhere where there's a time difference. Like when I was in New York at Christmas, we got the flight at 1, but then landed in the United States at 5. It's not a 4-hour flight. It's an 8-hour flight. It might have been 3 o'clock, actually. And then you're like, you're tired because your body clock's saying it's 10 o'clock at night, but the New York clock is saying it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So you sort of push through. You just got to, you got to adjust. But anyway, long story short, I feel like, I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm adapting to this. I'm almost living in New York time schedule in the UK. You're just adjusting your clock. So for the next 3 or 4 weeks, I'm not going to be going to bed at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night. I'm going to be going to bed at 2 or 4, which is just basically my body clock is adapting to New York, basically. And that's the way to do it. Don't fight against it, really. Iran Kunda for Australia is a good example, Mark, says Jim Jones. Yes. I haven't actually watched the highlights of that yet because I got up, had a shower, had something to eat, and obviously I'm live with you lot, but I do want to watch the highlights of that. If you work normal hours, you're going to struggle to do this World Cup. Yeah, if you normally have to be up at 6, 7, my major commitment in the week is the 10 o'clock show. So I can sort of get up at 8 and then, you know, go to bed at 2 and get 6. Anyway, sleep patterns, we can talk about on That's Football. On That's Football today, Germany against Curaçao at 6. I'm on here at 8 live, 8 o'clock live. And then 9 o'clock, Japan, Netherlands. And then midnight, it's another United game. It's Ahmad and Ivory Coast against Ecuador, which is Estebanan, Caicedo. Apparently, Ecuador haven't lost an international game for 20 games. And Ivory Coast are quite stacked as well. So I think there's some good games today. Looking forward to England and Portugal as well on Wednesday. Sunrisers Army, thanks for your super chat. He says, Edison, Fernandez and Lewis Hall would be an excellent start to the window. A good striker, a centre midfielder in Vitek or a backup goalkeeper would be great. I think you're running before you can walk, but why not, mate? You know, why not? You know, we've all got to predict where we're going to be on August the 31st when the window is basically over. I would like to be in a situation still where it's Edison, Fernandez and a tier one midfielder like Tchouaméni, Lewis Hall at left back, and, you know, a decent backup striker as a five core. And I would like us to bring in someone like a Touré from Hoffenheim as a left winger who's got immense potential. I would like to see 6 minimum signings. I wouldn't be happy with 4 or 5. And the quality of those... I'm not happy with 4 or 5 plan Ds. Whatever we do, I want plan As as much as possible. Are you liking the World Cup? This is Cloud. I'm loving it. I think, you know, we live in a world where people are very miserable. I think you've got red and green and not much in between. People are either over happy or over unhappy. And I think amber is the place to be. You know, some of the games last night were shit. Scotland's game was crap, but Scotland won. Second half, Brazil-Morocco, they were playing for a draw. It was crap. First half was good. But what I'm liking about it is the vibrancy of it. I'm liking the kickoff times. It feels like a World Cup. I'm old enough to have watched World Cups at silly o'clock, and I'm enjoying that. I think the stadia, like Ladios says, nice big stadiums too. The stadiums are brilliant. And everybody was moaning about tickets not being sold. Qatar, Switzerland had 67,000 people in it. I don't even know how you do that. How do you get 67,000 people to watch Qatar, Switzerland? Yeah, so look, I'm really enjoying it. And yeah, I was going to say something else, but I can't remember what it was. Emily Derry says, I'm not convinced Shaw will be as available next season. There's no World Cup or Euro squad to play for. Mount will spend a lot of time in the treatment room as well. They can't be relied upon. Yeah, I think Luke Shaw mentally, you make a great point, Emily. You know, factually, I don't rate him as a left back anyway. You know, I think most of Luke Shaw's Man United career now is PR. I think the club are aware of that. This is a very cynical but honest assessment. I think with Luke Shaw, his big positive is United spend a lot of time posting positivity about him. You know, he's not missed a game through injury. Here's a picture of Luke Shaw in the new kit. He's become a PR player because he's well liked in the football club. But when you actually scratch the surface of what he brings as a player, it's average at best. So I think with Luke Shaw, Emily, beyond the positive PR that the club promotes, what is there? A very average left back who is going into his 30s. And you're right. I think his motivation this season was to get into the World Cup squad. And I think him and Harry Maguire, I'm sure they're over it now as professionals, but I think him and Harry Maguire will have been very disappointed at the end of that season that they didn't go to the World Cup. And I think with Luke Shaw, he will look at it and go, well, I'm not going to the Euros in 2 years. Got no chance. There's other left backs that are better than me. And, you know, staying fit for 2 years at my age is going to be a very, very big effort. So I think Luke Shaw's challenge next year, as Emily says, is to stay fit. Now, we're doubling up his games. It's weekend and midweek, which I think you'll find a problem because, trust me, when you hit that age, he's got to change his whole plan. His whole plan last season would have been, I've got to play one game a week. Recovery, light work, gym work. That he'll have had some, you know, diet, whatever. He'll have had something going on that allows him to be able to play one game a week. He's got to find a way now to play two games a week. So I think it's going to be very difficult for Luke Shaw to maintain his availability next season. With regards to maintaining his ability, I don't actually think it was that good. I think in a back three, he was playing well. As a left back, I don't think he was doing the job of a left back. Do you think the team is signing for Carrick or neutral players in case it doesn't work out? Says Jay. Man United are signing players for Man United, not managers. That came out 18 months ago. It's a great point as well, Jel. We don't sign players for managers. We sign players for the club. They definitely do sign players with a mindset. If we sack the manager, we still like the player. Anyway, there we go. Great show today. Nearly 12,000 watching. We are live again at 8 p.m. tonight. But don't forget, on That's Football, we're live at 6 o'clock for Germany. 3 watch-alongs on That's Football. The World Cup is up and running and we're loving it. But don't forget, the United Stand is our priority. We're not going anywhere. We are going to be here on the ball, ready to react and discuss everything that's going on. And a lot is going on. Fernandez deal getting closer. Talks with Lewis Hall in the last couple of days. Things are happening. All I would say is I'm a little bit surprised we didn't have Bouadi on our radar. Not because of last night, but because Liverpool and Arsenal are after him and we need a midfielder like that. I'm a bit surprised we've never been linked for him. But, you know, hopefully, wherever he goes, he'll flop and we'll be fine. Loving the World Cup stream so far. Bold Mazraoui starting left back. Come on, England, says Kazim. Thank you very much. And Megas says, if Hall is the signing, then it needs to be quick before Tonali goes. Otherwise, the Hall deal becomes impossible and we're left with the likes of Belaba. Would still like Anderson or Tchouaméni with Hall. Esteban is the answer, says Elchi. And I have an exam tomorrow. I think I'm cooked, says Wim. Thank you so much. Stay safe, everyone. Take care. I'll speak to you all in a bit.